Good afternoon. I'm opening this meeting of the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology. It's April 13th. The first item on our agenda is a work session. I'm opening a work session on Senate Bill 87. Mr. McSpadden.
Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, as a quick reminder, at the highest level, Senate Bill 87 permits the state CIO to decide whether state contracting agencies or public corporations must obtain quality management services for IT initiatives in specific circumstances. If you'll recall, in existing law, there's a $5 million threshold. This bill gives the state CIO some additional discretion on that matter. The JLCIMT's held two public hearings, one on March 30th, one on April 6th. For today's work session, we have two items before us on this bill. The first item concerns possible adoption of the Dash 1 amendment. As a quick summary, the amendment to the measure requires the state CIO to submit a report to the legislative fiscal officer by December 31st of each year that identifies the IT initiatives for which the value exceeds $5 million and the state CIO determines that the quality management services are not necessary.
Okay.
Madam Co-Chair, I move adoption of the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 87.
Discussion. Objections. Motion passes.
Madam Co-Chair, I move Senate Bill 87 be reported out, do pass as amended, and be referred to Ways and Means by prior reference.
Discussion on this motion. Objections. Motion passes. Thank you. So, do we need a carrier?
We do not.
To Ways and Means.
Because it's going to Ways and Means and will be heard again.
Heard again before it goes to
before it
full.
Goes to the floor.
In the cell.
Got it.
Yep.
Or even to
or even
full.
To mm-hmm.
Yes. So we don't need it at this point yet. Okay. I'm closing the work session on Senate Bill 87. I mean, 87.
Sir. That's right.
And then the next one is... is it all right with the committee if we go in the order that this was printed, that the agenda is printed? Looks like it is. I am opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 872. Mr. McSpadden.
Representative Nathanson, members of the committee, it's been a month or more before we've talked about this particular bill, and so I'd like to refresh the committee's memory. As the members may recall, on February 23rd, the JLCIMT voted to have legislative concept 2131 introduced as a JLCIMT Senate Bill 872. On March 20th, Senate Bill 872 received a public hearing and work session before the Senate Committee on General Government and Accountability, at which time Senate Bill 872 was voted out of committee with a due pass recommendation. With some amendments, with subsequent referrals to this committee, after assuming it moves out of the JLCIMT at some point, it will also move on to Ways and Means. The measure does three primary things. First, the measure establishes a new Department of Information Technology, which would transfer the Office of the State CIO and Enterprise IT and supporting functions from the Department of Administrative Services to the new agency. However, the measure does retain the DAS internal IT organization within DAS. As a reminder, the DAS director and the state CIO are both governor's appointees with independent authority. However, the Office of the State CIO is currently housed budgetarily and administratively within the office of the, within the Department of Administrative Services. The current organizational structure is less than ideal for a variety of reasons. Senate Bill 872 will move the Office of the State CIO into a newly formed independent agency, propelling Oregon in the direction taken by nearly 30 other states in one form or another. Second, the measure transfers the state IT procurement functions and authority from DAS and the DAS director to the Department of Information Technology and the state CIO. Based on previous analysis and reports that have been provided to the JLCIMT over the past year or two, the transition of state IT procurement authority to the state CIO makes sense and is not a unique organizational model across the nation. This transition was originally included in House Bill 3099, in 2015, but was amended out under a compromise with the DAS director and the governor's office at that time. The transfer of procurement authority to the state CIO from the DAS director recognizes the state CIO's and his staff's specialized expertise, and in this case, the state CIO's explicit authority for enterprise IT operations, oversight, planning, rulemaking, policy, and standard setting, and his role as the governor's primary advisor on information technology and telecommunications. Although 21 of the 50 states across the nation do place state IT procurement authority with a central procurement officer, 11 states currently place that authority and the resources to conduct state IT procurements and price agreements with the state CIO. With a proper amount of leadership and cooperation, there is no reason to believe that this model can't also be implemented and work effectively and efficiently in Oregon. As an aside, I did want to note for the committee that a few proposed amendments to Senate Bill 872 have been posted over the past week or so, primarily related to the procurement portion of the bill. Third, the measure establishes a new information technology-centric chapter of Oregon laws. Essentially, we'll take information technology-related content from a variety of disparate statutes and organize them or consolidate them into one chapter of Oregon law. Really, it's an organizational administrative measure for clarity and transparency. The last thing I wanted to remind the committee of is that back in September of 2016, the JLCIMT did discuss or contemplate a bill that would fully consolidate all executive branch IT personnel and assets from state agencies. As of today, there's approximately 1,900 IT classified positions distributed throughout 47 agencies, boards, and commissions across the executive branch. That original LEDSLIP concept that was being contemplated would move all of those positions into the newly established Department of IT. However, it's important that this to clarify that this version of Senate Bill 872 is confined only to those three primary purposes that I described and does not include this full IT consolidation concept at this time.
Okay. So we have opened the public hearing. LFO has explained the bill for us. We have one person signed up for testimony. Ms. Koba.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. Katie Koba, State Chief Operating Officer and Director for the Department of Administrative Services. I am here today to share with you the latest position from the governor's office on Senate Bill 872. And I know, Madam Co-Chair and Mr. Co-Chair, that you had meetings yesterday from the governor's office conveying the current position from the governor's office. And it relates to two provisions in the bill that LFO staff referred to. The first is the transfer of the IT procurement functions from DAS to the state new state Department of Technology as outlined in the bill. And as I had testified, Senator Riley, in the General Government Committee, we oppose that transfer of positions at this time. What we'd like to do is have the enterprise leadership team take time over the course of the biennium to really analyze what would be the appropriate structure in Oregon for IT procurement. This is an issue that's not being discussed solely in Oregon. It is an issue at the national level, and both our chief procurement officer and our state CIO are sitting on a national task force that's looking at this very idea. So I think we feel at this point in time that we'd like to gather some information and really spend some time thinking about what is a good structure in Oregon in terms of that the very important connection between IT procurement that's currently housed in DAS and the state CIO's office. The second component of the bill, which is to create a standalone Department of Information Technology, the governor's office is at the place right now where they'd like to put a pause for a moment on this conversation and conduct an assessment of really the CIO functions, which have changed dramatically over the course of this current biennium as a result of House Bill 3099 that was passed in the 2015 session. And so there are a lot of things that are going on in the CIO's office, and the governor's office wants to do an assessment in concert with the state CIO about the functions that are currently underway in the CIO's office. One of those is a very high-profile issue, which you've heard about, and that's the security assessment for all state agencies, which is underway. And there are a number of other initiatives currently being undertaken by the CIO. So the governor's office is proposing about a 4 to 6 week assessment of the current operations within the CIO's office, and would like to take that time to then determine what their position is on establishing a separate standalone Department of Information Technology. So that's changed a little bit from where we were when we appeared in front of your committee, Senator Riley.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yes, Senator Riley.
Thank you. And thank you for that testimony. I did have that meeting with the governor's office yesterday. And for my point, which is not necessarily the committee's point, but my point, I agree that I would agree to a four-week period where they could do a, and the governor's office indicated that that would be plenty of time.
Other questions or comments during this public hearing? Yes, Representative.
So, after the 4 weeks or whatever, we'll get a chance to revisit this and ask more questions and have another hearing on it then, right?
My assumption is at the end of that 4 weeks, we will bring the bill back for another public hearing where we can ask questions and hopefully have a work session at the end of that public hearing.
Good.
Yes, Senator.
Will we be part of the distribution of the data, the information, the report, et cetera? Having a public meeting and seeing it on a slide, you know, as it gets put into OLIS isn't as nice as being able to review it, contemplate, and think about it. This is a almost 50-page bill. I mean, it is gigantic, and this is taking the whole berry pie and shoving it down the hatch. I would prefer we had slices of it, and you know, when you look at some of the things, the state chief, section 8.6, ensure reasonably appropriate remedial actions are sent. Yet 7 says state agencies continue their responsibility for securing computer hardware and software, et cetera. Then you know, we keep flipping back and forth, who actually is responsible and how does this really work and coalesce? I think that's probably why the governor's office is saying, well, wait a minute, what about this and what about this? Let's investigate, let's research, let's slow down. Slowing down would be, you know, 10 pages each across 6 bills instead of, 50 pages in one fell swoop. So just general comments about the complexity of what we're attempting to accomplish.
Thank you.
If I may, Madam Chair, thank you. Actually, we've been looking at this for about 8 years, and we passed a huge piece of it in 3099. This is actually basically the final piece of the pie. We've done a lot of the pie in the past. 3099 did most of it, frankly. This is maybe 2 slices, not just one, but 2 slices. The actual agency and the procurement, I think, is 2 slices. But I think that's really all we're talking about is 2 slices and not a whole lot of others.
And SB90 would be the whipped cream then, right?
Yeah. Well, SB90 is a whole different issue, but yes.
Yes, Mr. Spade.
Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, with this pause, one thing I'd like to offer, because the bill is long, there are a variety of reasons why the bill is as long as it is. In part, it has to do with the third element of the bill, which is the creation of the new information technology chapter. The way the bill is drafted, the first section essentially forms the new IT chapter of law, but it essentially takes existing content from existing statutes. And so won't go into any level of detail, but with this pause, I'd be glad to meet with any one of you and or in a group of a size that's less than a quorum at any time to kind of walk through the different components of this particular bill. Just want to offer that.
And as stated, you just stated, if I may, that this the only two pieces that are not in current law are the two pieces that we've been talking about. Everything else that's in this bill is current law. It's just moving from one section to another.
And yes, Representative.
Thanks. And I'd be just interested, the fiscal analysis is just a shell there, so I'd be interested to see the fiscal analysis. I know we're not a Ways and Means subcommittee, but just to spin up a new agency, I'd just be interested to see the fiscal on that.
Sure.
Any other discussion? Thank you for your testimony. And I am, there's no one else signed up to speak. So I'm closing the public hearing on 872. The next item on our agenda is a work session, Oregon Employment Department. Mr. McSpaden.
Yes. Just one second. Forgive me one second while I get organized here. I need to find my papers. My apologies. Here it is. Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, as Co-Chair Nathanson, you indicated, up next is the Oregon Employment Department, here to talk about their modernization initiative. As described in the LFO analysis and recommendations memo that I've posted on OLIS, within the agency's budget bill, House Bill 5007, there is a policy option package 101, within which the Oregon Employment Department has made a revised request for other funds expenditure limitation in the amount of $4.7 million to be supplemented by approximately $700,000 from the agency's base budget. The total planned expenditures for the modernization initiative in the 2017-19 biennium are approximately $5.4 million. These resources will be used primarily for contracted professional services costs and 18 positions. Those positions equate to 13.95 FTE over the course of the biennium and are comprised of a mix of positions. Some of those positions are intended to be backfill so that highly experienced staff that exists within the agency can be shifted to the project as subject matter experts, and as well as a few new dedicated project resources. Again, these resources are being requested to help the agency complete the initiation and planning phases of the initiative. In alignment with the joint state CIO LFO stage gate review process, the agency anticipates that expenditure limitation for the project will be scheduled in stages throughout the 2017-19 biennium, with periodic status reports provided to the legislature during the 2018 annual session, and as directed through the 2017-19 interim, and then finally the agency is expected to come back in the 2019 legislative session prior to the initiation of any implementation activities. They would be expected to ask the legislature's formal approval to proceed. As the project is in its early initiation and planning phases, a specific cost estimate or time frame for completion of the entire initiative cannot yet be determined. But the agency is here today to provide an overview of the modernization initiative to the committee and answer any questions you may have.
Thank you.
If you could please introduce yourself for the record.
Great. Co-Chair Nathanson, Co-Chair Riley, members of the committee. Good afternoon. My name is Kay Erickson. I am the director of the Oregon Employment Department. We're back today for phase two of our testimony, focusing, as Mr. McSpaden has just told you, on our modernization initiative. With me at the table is Bill Truex, the department's chief information officer, and he's the guy you want to direct your really tough questions to. Are you driving for me?
We're good.
The goal of modernization is to replace our core business and IT systems to better meet the needs of our customers and improve data security. Our core systems supporting unemployment insurance functions were designed in the 1990s, long before the widespread use of the internet to conduct business and transmit information. These are mainframe systems written in COBOL programming language. Our workforce operation job matching system is 13 years old. It's our new system, and we all know really how much business has changed in the last decade. Business needs are continuously evolving, making our business processes increasingly inefficient as we deploy workarounds because we're limited by our aging infrastructure. We want to serve Oregonians and Oregon businesses better. The department has implemented many systems over time in response to changes in federal and state requirements and to enhance our services. While these systems solved immediate needs, they are not fully integrated and have only limited compatibility with today's technology. This architecture is extremely difficult to maintain. For example, one simple program update requires multiple changes through a maze of subprograms. This complexity creates a high probability of introducing errors. It is also increasingly more difficult for us to hire IT staff with skills in these legacy languages. 20% of our IT workforce is eligible to retire today, and 38% is eligible to retire in the next 5 years. We're not the only agency or the only state with an aging infrastructure. This map is specific to unemployment insurance systems and shows the status of modernization projects across the nation. Most of the UI systems in the country still run on mainframe computers, and many states face the same challenges we do. Because Oregon is neither the first nor the last to modernize, we have the opportunity to learn from other states' mistakes and also take advantage of the fact that now there are a number of new systems available. The Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act was signed into law in 2014 and is the first legislative reform of the public workforce system in the last 15 years. The law requires states to submit a single coordinated plan for all the workforce programs in the state and also seeks to improve effectiveness and streamline the workforce system. Last fall, Governing Magazine did a survey of state officials who are responsible for implementing the act and found that 81% of the respondents from 41 states think that the updated law is positive, especially because it relates to improved collaboration among workforce agencies. But states still have technology gaps, and many cannot effectively implement the law within the constraints of their current business systems. Although we share the same concerns, challenges, and constraints as our counterparts in other states, not all workforce programs are structured in the same way across the nation. So this map shows the results of a 2015 survey done by the National Association of State Workforce Agencies about the organizational structure of workforce programs in each state. The table at the bottom lists the core programs as identified by the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act and gives a high-level summary of whether these programs are housed in a single agency or not. The table and the map are color-coded to illustrate the number and type of programs that are consolidated within each state. So looking at the map then, for example, the teal states are those that have 6 of the 9 core workforce programs in one agency. Oregon falls into that category, along with 22 other states. I'm sharing this graphic to illustrate that even though the federal government authorizes workforce programs and many states are replacing the same business systems we are, state agencies are not all alike. We hope to be able to procure off-the-shelf products that have already been successfully implemented in other states. But before we can make a judgment about whether another state's modernization effort might benefit us, we need to understand the similarities and differences between our service delivery models, our partners, our data sharing requirements, and our information technology architecture. This is a really high-level overview of the partners inside and outside of state government with whom we interact routinely to perform key functions of the agency. We cannot conduct business without these core process partners. So again, for this illustration, the blue shaded boxes identify the departments programs that would be within scope for modernization. The green shaded box identifies our programs that would be affected but not in scope for modernization, and then the lightly shaded boxes around the diagram represent our external partners who access, send data to, or receive data from us. So, for example, if you look at the top left of the diagram, you can see that a check for unemployment insurance benefits can't be processed without us interacting with a local bank and the state treasury. If you move to the top center, you can see that services available through our WorkSource centers depend on collaboration with other state agencies, local workforce boards, federal partners, and community nonprofits. And then for each of the core processes in the illustration, there's also a data sharing box that identifies partners who are dependent upon information from our systems to conduct their business activities. The data we gather and share exists in many systems. So although when we talk about modernization, you will hear us say three core programs, unemployment insurance, benefits, unemployment insurance, tax, and workforce operations, there are really many subsystems in place supporting those programs. So this graphic illustrates how our internal systems are interrelated. And you can't really see the specific names on this map, and it's not really important for my purpose today, because the intent of showing this diagram is to demonstrate the complexity and volume of disparate systems that interact to support our core programs. As I said earlier, these systems have evolved over time as laws and programs have changed and new requirements have been implemented. Subsystems have been deployed to meet these needs, creating this very complex system architecture. Not all of the data systems will be replaced. The color shading identifies systems we currently expect to be in scope for modernization. So the dark blue area identifies unemployment insurance benefits systems. The light blue identifies workforce operations. The green area identifies unemployment insurance tax systems. And then within each of those shaded areas, you'll see orange boxes with bold outlining. Those orange boxes represent user interfaces or systems that are directly accessed by citizens and businesses. This is our estimated timeline for modernization. And as you can see, we expect the initiative to take several biennia to complete. Major milestones are represented here, along with expected timing for stage gate approvals from the Office of the State CIO, LFO, and the legislature. And you can also see we're at the very beginning of the initiative. We're currently working on a feasibility study and early process mapping, as approved in the 2015 session. And then if you look to the far right of the timeline, you will see that we would begin to implement new systems in 2020 and beyond. The first major task of the modernization initiative is to complete this feasibility study. And the purpose of the feasibility study really is to give us a roadmap forward. We're making good progress in the plan we updated and shared with your colleagues in Ways and Means last February. We have a business-led executive-level steering committee that meets twice monthly. We hired a vendor to provide project management services. In the last month, we've really begun to build the project team. So far, we've hired a program manager to lead the initiative and coordinate activities within the agency. Three business analysts who conduct research, provide analysis, and prepare documentation, and a vendor to work with us on the feasibility study. And the vendor we chose to help with the feasibility study is the IT Support Center. The IT Support Center is a nonprofit organization that's part of the National Association of State Workforce Agencies and also affiliated with the U.S. Department of Labor. So we chose them because they understand, of course, the federal workforce programs, and they also work with other states in their modernization planning. Feasibility study has six major deliverables, as you can see on this chart, a business needs assessment, a system functionality and technology assessment, a gap analysis, a market analysis, and then a strategic plan for modernization, outlining timelines, milestones, costs, and risks. And finally, a modernization readiness assessment that will help us identify for each division of the agency our level of preparedness to really undertake a project of this size. This excerpt from a recent weekly status report shows we're on target for schedule, cost, and scope for this first step. We expect to complete the feasibility study at the end of this year, just prior to the 2018 session. And therefore, we think that the February session seems like an appropriate time for us to check back in with the legislature about our progress. That brings me to a high-level look at the budget. As Mr. McSpadden said, we have one-time revenue from the U.S. Department of Labor that we're planning to use to fund this initiative. And really, it's too early in the process for us to have an estimate of the total cost. So we've left some placeholders in this chart for upcoming biennium. So you see that the budget we expect to increase over time. Our current biennium budget includes resources to contract for project management services, develop an initial business case, hire project staff, obtain quality assurance services, conduct a risk assessment, and submit for stage gate review. And although we're making great progress now, we did get a late start on the project, largely because of changes in key leadership roles, including a change of director, deputy director, and chief information officer. So due to the delayed start, some of the outcomes expected in this current biennium will shift into next biennium. And then this table shows our updated estimated expenditures based on our progress to date for both the current biennium and updated estimate for next biennium. During the upcoming biennium, we're asking for approval of resources to complete the feasibility study, document the business and technical requirements at a sufficient level for us to develop and publish a request for proposal, and then begin vendor evaluation and selection. We're asking for a total of 18 positions at approximately 14 full-time equivalents, and some of these positions carry forward from the current biennium, including those that I mentioned, the program manager, project manager, and three business analysts. Five of the positions will provide administrative and business support directly to the initiative, including clerical, procurement, quality assurance, communications, and change management functions. And then eight of the positions will act as subject matter experts. The subject matter expert positions will be filled by experienced department staff who would be temporarily or intermittently assigned to the project team. And then as needed, we would hire new employees to provide core services to backfill for those positions while they're working on the project. And I think that concludes my prepared remarks, and we're happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Yes, Senator Riley.
So if you go back to that last slide, please, the subject matter experts, could you explain in a little more detail what their role will be?
Sure. These folks would come in and out of the project team as needed to do business process requirements, business mapping, begin to look at the data we have in all those current systems and identify fields and timelines and what data would get archived, what would move forward, help maybe begin with the cleansing of the data. They would look at and create inventories of the kinds of letters that our systems create currently. They would help create inventories of what types of reporting might be necessary. And so they're really helping identify what our business looks like now, what our business could look like in the future, and do that kind of translation for the technical project team.
Follow up?
Yes.
So you also have business analysts. What you described sounds like a business analyst. What are the business analysts?
Co-Chair Nathanson, Co-Chair Riley. The business analysts are in this construct doing more of the research functions, so looking at other states, where they are in their systems, looking at other systems, analyzing the information as it's gathered, helping to prepare foundational documents for the project to support stage gate requirements and just general project documentation requirements.
So research analysts, okay.
Yes, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So on the LFO part of the presentation, it talks about, $82 million or something like that, $85.6 million that you got in a grant in 2009. Is that's kind of the scope of your funding for this project then, right?
Yes. So the $85 million, it was a one-time source of revenue or funding. The U.S. Department of Labor transferred to the department for general modernization of unemployment insurance. So not necessarily dedicated to IT infrastructure, but to modernize IT or UI business systems and practices. It is the source of revenue we have for the project, and we hope, right, that it's enough. We've done some early look at other states and their costs, but because, as you saw from the mapping, states are constructed so very differently, it's hard for us yet to have much understanding of what that cost might be.
Yeah. So, although there's 22, if I can follow, there's 22 other states that were kind of in the light blue thing that are kind of like Oregon. So, I'll just comment, and you can comment on my comment. But we've had kind of some good success with going and just picking things and then getting the operations of the agency to conform to that. So, I hope that that's something that you'll at least take a look at there. So, there's 22 possible laboratories set up for you there. So.
Absolutely. I do appreciate that remark. And it is our desire to buy a system already in use and successful and not do custom application development. And certainly that means if we're not fitting a system to match our business practices, then we're fitting our business practices to the system we procure.
Good.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. To tag along with that, I strongly urge that if you need changes in rules and regulations to further match another state, pick a state as close as we can, and that way when they have changes in software, we're included. The cost that we're spending for software and hardware is astronomical. And I think what we do is we tend to want to create our own systems. It's much cheaper for us to change our system to another state and start standardizing so we can just take add-ons and pre-created systems. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Other discussion? Mr. Spain.
Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. Co-Chair Nathanson, certainly we have posted, an LFO analysis and recommendations memo. I have a list probably of 10 or 12 detailed recommendations. I certainly could go through all of them, or I could simply make a summary recommendation to the committee.
Let me ask the committee, have you had a chance to take a look at that online? Okay, I think you could just, for the record, just very briefly summarize.
Are we in a work session?
Yes.
We are in a work session.
Thank you.
So Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, as more fully described in the detailed recommendations that I've made on page 3 and 4 of the memo posted on OLIS, the Legislative Fiscal Office recommends that the JLCIMT adopt those general and specific recommendations for incremental conditional approval of Policy Option Package 101, assuming the spending authority and personnel resources are made available to the Employment Department within their budget bill, House Bill 5007, by the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Good.
Madam Co-Chair, I move adoption of the LFO recommendation.
Discussion on the motion. Objections. Motion passes.
And very quickly, Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, from this point, this is the first project that we've brought forward to this committee for a work session. We do anticipate a handful of additional projects between now and the end of the session. The next step I'll take is to prepare a transmittal memo from the JLCIMT to the Transportation and Economic Development Subcommittee of Ways and Means so that they can understand the action this committee has taken. Okay.
Good. Thank you. There's no other business with this work session, so I'm closing the work session on the modernization project, and I'm opening, and thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
I'm opening an informational meeting, Department of Environmental Quality, Mr. McSpade.
Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, the Department of Environmental Quality is here. Additionally, the Strategic Technology Officer for the State CIO's office is also here with them to talk about their environmental data management system project, which is also very early in its life cycle. So, gentlemen, thank you for being here. If you could please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you. For the record, Richard Whitman, the Director of the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. Thank you for having us here today, committee members. I have with me today two other folks, Clint Bollinger, who's the IT Operations Manager for the department, and then also Daryl Landrum, who is from the CIO's office and works with natural resource agencies on their technology issues and projects. So I'm going to kick off the high-level presentation, not as detailed as you just saw from the Employment Department, on our environmental data management system. And let me start by saying that this is really the highest budget priority for the department in this session. And let me tell you why. The first reason why is customer service and efficiency. DEQ plays an important role in regulating our business community, and we have some issues. DEQ has the unfortunate status of having the second worst backlog for water quality permitting in the United States, and that's something that we are determined to change. Part of the reason that we have such a backlog is because our information management systems are antiquated, they're splintered, and they do not lend themselves to process improvement when we're working with our regulated community. The second reason for this being a top priority for the agency is communications transparency. The department is an agency of the state that gets quite a bit of public attention. We get a lot of public records requests also, and we frankly spend a lot of time responding to those requests. We have a problem there as well, and the problem is that we do not have systems to make all of the information that we have outward facing and accessible to the public and, again, to the business community. So setting up platforms where instead of making public records requests, somebody can go and get the information they're looking for readily is part of the reason this is also a top priority for the agency. And then finally, we are at the state level here, part of an enterprise in terms of protecting public health and the environment. We work with, above us, the Federal Environmental Protection Agency, and then we also work with local governments who are designated to implement a number of our programs. At the federal level, EPA has been moving fairly aggressively toward electronic reporting requirements, and we are out of compliance with EPA's e-reporting requirements, and that means in terms of being an effective enterprise, we are not interacting either with EPA or with local government in the ways that we need to. So this is a big project for the agency. It is a business improvement project, at least as much as it is an IT project. With that, I think I'm going to turn it over to Clint Bollinger, who's our IT manager, to walk you through some of the main elements of the project and give you a sense of where we are in the development of this important initiative. Clint.
Hello, co-chairs Nathanson and Riley, committee members. For the record, my name is Clint Bollinger. I'm the IT operations manager for the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. And we're just going to jump through a couple of slides here about our current state of affairs, sort of what we've found other states are doing, and then get into a little bit of what this project is going to do moving forward. So the current state of business systems here at Oregon DEQ. Many of DEQ systems are well over 10 years old. Several are over 15 years old. And these systems were initially developed with funding that was granted for the startup of individual programs throughout the history of DEQ. And then throughout that history, then they were not really properly funded to keep maintained and keep updated moving forward. So they were kind of funded up front and then left to sit. Also, no lifecycle management has really been put onto any of those applications either. So DEQ has many applications that are written on older technology platforms that are no longer supported. We have several applications running on Windows Server 2003, and these applications will not tolerate running on newer infrastructure. As mentioned before by Director Whitman, we have several disparate systems that they don't work with one another. We have over 15 systems, for example, within the agency that just handle the business process of issuing invoices and tracking invoice payments. So all the different programs have their own invoicing system that will generate an invoice and send it out. That means in a given month, a business that we regulate that has more than one environmental interest could foreseeably get two invoices from DEQ with different account numbers, different remittance information, and different terms entirely. And in some cases, the invoices themselves even look different. We also have a pretty wide array of business needs that are not being fulfilled through our business systems. So in order to meet the demands, we have quite a lot of what we call shadow systems, access databases, Microsoft Excel with macro written applications that in order to meet the needs, staff have found a way by hook or by crook to get the work done. And so these systems obviously were often written without the use of best practices or standards. And they are also not supported by the central IT group. So on this slide, we show this is about 35 of the over 130 applications that we know about within Oregon DEQ. This does not include that number of 130 does not include the shadow systems that we don't even know about. Here on this slide, we just show some screenshots from some of the applications that we have running. You can see there's some access databases on there, some very old Visual Basic forms, and some classic ASP as well. Many of our systems are written on just technology that can't be supported anymore by the vendors. So what will EDMS do? As stated before, this is really a large-scale business process improvement project. We'll be reviewing all business processes and standardizing the key processes across the board. Some examples would be the application process for permits, the reporting process, an invoicing process, which we plan on including in that acceptance of electronic payments, which is another one of those current business needs that is not being fulfilled. We also plan to consolidate the disparate business systems under one off-the-shelf product. We are seeking to find efficiencies in that way and facilitating additional crosstalk among the environmental programs that's not currently available. We are seeking an off-the-shelf product to handle these business workflows throughout the agency. While the agency has grown up in very disparate ways, there is a lot of standard functions that go on program to program. We just need a system that is versatile enough to handle the nuances of land, air, and water specific information. As was mentioned previously, there was a budget note in 15-17 for DEQ to do a third-party analysis of our water quality permitting programs. And from that analysis is where Director Whitman had found, we are second worst in the country for our permitting program in water quality. Really? We also have shown over 15 years a persistent and chronic backlog. So it's not new to it's not new to us. It's been around for quite a while. So we're looking for this system to help increase overall agency efficiency and timeliness as well. This system will provide a portal for the public to facilitate their ability to find information on their own, as well as a mechanism for them to request information that they haven't been able to find. A portal for the regulated community to help manage all of their business and environmental transactions with DEQ, as well as a portal for the staff to help manage the overall day-to-day workflows. And so we know this. We know that this is feasible because we have looked at what other states are doing in this arena. In 2015, the agency did a feasibility study and an RFI. Through these interviews and subsequent research, we found that there are several products that are available off the shelf that are used in many states throughout the country. There is one note about Texas. Texas is actually in a mixed environment. They have a large chunk that is off the shelf, but they also have some custom-built pieces and some in-house built pieces that were all designed and built to work with the off-the-shelf product. So everything works in concert there. We also did in that investigation how many states throughout the country had achieved Chrome Air compliance. And Chrome Air compliance is the cross-media electronic reporting rule through the EPA. It essentially is a federal rule that deals with the mechanisms and standards for accepting electronic reports from regulated entities. You'll notice there is a direct correlation from states that have off-the-shelf products to states that have full Chrome Air compliance. Oregon DEQ does not have any Chrome Air compliant applications currently.
So just to recap a little bit, there are a couple of main drivers for this work. One of them is, again, process improvement, customer service. It is DEQ's mission to protect public health and the environment, but it's also part of our job to make sure we're doing that in a way that is not an unnecessary impediment to economic activity in the state. And so getting this work done is a key to maintaining those appropriate relationships with the business community, the regulated community. And then, as I mentioned also, there is a big demand on the part of the public for information about the environment. And with Oregon DEQ unable to effectively communicate solid scientific information about the status of the environment, it leads to problems. And so getting our information out in an effective way that can be understood by the public and that is timely is key to addressing some of the more difficult policy issues that we have facing us.
So this project is, as Director Whitman had mentioned, is we're trying to find alignment with the governor's vision for responsible environmental stewardship and a thriving statewide economy. We are also working diligently with Daryl and to ensure that this project aligns with the Natural Resources Information Resource Management Plan through enhancing, you know, making sure that we are working on enhancing security and good stewardship of enterprise IT resources. And we are also making sure that this project is in direct alignment with DEQ Strategic Business Plan, which ultimately all go into alignment to make sure that we are moving forward as planned, where everyone is the project is moving forward in alignment with all of the visions and strategic plans that have been set forth through all of the oversight governing bodies. Apologies. So steps we have taken so far. First off, the Environmental Quality Commission have shown overwhelming support for this project and have supported it being one of the agency's top three priorities moving forward. We've worked directly with the state CIO's office on the business case, and we continue to work with that team to ensure that the project is managed properly, and we are working within best practices. We have received Stage Gate 1 endorsement earlier this year, and we are currently working on Stage Gate 2.
We have a question. Senator Riley.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. A little bit ago, you mentioned, you didn't call it this, but ancillary programs that are hanging off the core systems. And one of the things we know is that when we get fixes to the core systems, those ancillary programs will need modification as well. And so I'm going to hope that you're going to minimize those ancillary programs and change your business practices to fit your core systems instead of having all those programs hanging off the core system.
Co-Chair Nathanson, Co-Chair Riley. Yes, as was pointed out in the previous presentation, this is going to be an effort both to build a new IT system for the agency, but it is just as much building new business processes to fit that system so that we are in alignment between the two. And frankly, as much as possible to the other point that was made, following systems that are used in other states so that we can both learn from them and hopefully get some cost savings by doing that.
Follow up. Yes. And the other thing is that as we know, as long as anybody has computers, they're going to be shadow systems. Mm-hmm. And so I also would recommend that you have some way to ensure that when people create their little access programs to do something that you're not doing, you make sure that you're that you know about it.
Sir. Co-Chair Nathanson and Riley, thank you. The point well taken, absolutely.
Yes, Senator.
Thank you. Following along a little bit with the Senator's questions, with regard to process improvement in customer service, and in Director Whitman, when you were describing it, there's a backlog, et cetera. You have to be familiar, in Klamath County, there's a permit that hasn't been renewed for 17 years. I don't believe that's the result of a software problem. And to the senator's point about process improvement can't do anything, or software can't do anything to solve the process problem. And I'm wondering if you can address that.
Certainly. Co-Chair Nathanson, Co-Chair Riley, Senator Linthicum. I think you're most likely referring to something that's called the Klamath Total Maximum Daily Load, or maybe in more familiar terms, a clean water plan for the Klamath River. That is actually 27. So the permits on the Klamath, the two municipal, two industrial permits on the Klamath are on the order of 25 years out of date at this point. They're the late 1980s.
Let the record show I stand corrected.
Yes, yes. It's even worse than you described. And the reasons for that are several, but they include the fact that the data required to do that permitting needs to be assembled and is not easily available in certain, not single systems or even several systems. There also are practical problems with those permits in terms of compliance with water quality standards that need to be worked through, so that when we issue a permit for those facilities, it is a permit that it is feasible to comply with. Part of the problem here and part of the backlog has been an unwillingness on the part of the agency to issue permits that we know in advance somebody can't comply with. And so this work on the backlog is a combination of work on a number of necessary, but not any one of which is a sufficient piece to fix the problem. EDMS is one piece. It's not by itself going to fix those problems, though.
Yes.
With regard to that, in terms of a hesitancy on the agency's part to issue something that they know is not, cannot be, compliance requirements can't be met, is the Chrome Air product a reporting and compliance product specifically for the EPA, which I would then say makes compliance even harder because it's now no longer state mandated, state run, state controlled. It's now kicked into the federal environment. You and I have worked together in the past on Clean Air Quality Act at the federal level, which was just killing us in the Klamath Basin. And it isn't the Chrome Air product specifically for meeting the electronic filing requirements for the EPA and allowing the rest of us plebeians to get into it and see signatures and those kinds of things. But nevertheless, EPA is the focus.
Co-chairs Nathanson and Riley, Senator Linthicum, the Chrome Air is a rule, a mandate for how information is reported in. It's not a product. It's just a mechanism to ensure that the information that is reported is kept as a copy of record, and that is electronically signed properly. And there's multiple levels of security to ensure that the information that is being reported correctly from an actual regulated entity.
Let me step in. My questions with regard to this is a requirement for reporting to the EPA, not a requirement for reporting to your agency, or vice versa, or am I wrong?
It's a requirement for regulated entities to be able to, for us to be able to collect electronic information from those entities. We have to meet a certain level of compliance with the Chrome Air.
If I could, Co-Chair Nathanson, Co-Chair Riley, Senator Linthicum, it's an EPA requirement for the state that the state has to meet in terms of its reporting to EPA.
Okay. That's my point.
Yep.
Because your comment was with regard to hesitancy for...
Correct.
Thank you.
Let's continue.
Okay. I believe we were at, we received Stage Gate 1 endorsement. We are working on the business analysis for Stage Gate 2. DEQ has hired a senior level project manager to assess the project's success. We are partnering with the team that is from the agency that is currently responding to that water quality report that, as we mentioned before, from the budget note in 1517. That team has been formed to take that the findings of that report and make actionable tasks and projects out of that. We are partnering with that group to ensure that we are not duplicating efforts in any way and that we are keeping staff in alignment to both sort of projects concurrently. We are also planning on sharing resources and artifacts wherever possible. And DEQ has formed its executive steering committee for this project, which we're going to talk about on the next slide, dealing with governance. So project governance for this project, we have the executive steering committee. Director Whitman is the executive sponsor of this project. We have members of DEQ's leadership team. We also have Daryl Landrum is an adjunct member of this executive steering committee to help ensure that we maintain alignment with state CIO's office. And we also have, we've brought this forward to the Environmental Quality Commission, and they have agreed that having a member on the executive steering committee would be absolutely beneficial. We just have yet to determine who that individual is. So that is TBD at the moment. We plan on forming a technical steering committee. This will be comprised of program managers and technical managers, as well as represented and non-represented staff. And then we have the project team, who will be the sponsors, project managers, and subject matter experts, the main doers of the work. The funding.
And I'd like to make a point here as we're moving away from the slide on project governance. I'd like to make the point that has, in an oblique way, already come up at the table. Project governance lasts for the length of the project, and I was very glad to see it's not all the IT staff. It's it appears to be people involved in the programs of the department and the business of the department who are on the executive steering committee, so that the technology is helping enable the program rather than we're just doing another technology project. My concern is that to avoid devolving into a situation where we have dozens of shadow systems and 15 different invoicing systems in the future, you know, once this is in place, how do you avoid devolving into that situation again over time? So I wonder what it is about how IT is managed in your agency on an ongoing basis that mirrors at least a little bit what you've got for project governance. What will IT governance be like so that you don't end up here again?
Thank you for the question, Co-Chair Nathanson, Co-Chair Riley, members. We are embarked within DEQ on a pretty significant reorganization effort right now. There hasn't been a lot of publicity about this, but there was a reorg that was started a couple of years ago by one of my predecessors, which never was fully completed. And one of the things that it did was it moved away from an organization around a structure of air, land, and water to a more functional organization. Part of the result of that and part of the result of the history of DEQ has been that much of the substantive work in the agency has devolved out to the regions. And so part of answering your question, part of the reason there are so many IT systems is the organization in DEQ is actually quite decentralized, and much of the shadow systems and other, even other regular systems, have come about really from work that the regions have done without a whole lot of central oversight. So part of what we're doing with this reorganization, we're not getting rid of the regions, don't worry, but we are going back to an organization that is clear and based on air, land, and water, so people know who is accountable within each of those categories, and to clarify the relationships between DEQ headquarters and the regions, particularly with some of the systems elements like this. so that we don't have this sort of situation occurring again. And we're underway with that effort, being led by the leadership team within the agency, but with input from the Environmental Quality Commission, and we will be seeking input from external customers as well as we go forward on that effort. So that's my answer to your question.
Thank you for the response. Yep.
So moving forward, our funding philosophy for this project is to have it majority funded through bond sale. We've worked with Department of Treasury, the state CIO's office, as well as the CFO's office, and all are in agreement that a bond is appropriate for this an appropriate funding mechanism for this type of project. DEQ is seeking general fund for the debt service on the bond, as well as additional general fund for some of the non-bondable work that is also needed to make sure that this project is successful. We have a policy option package put forward, 161, for approximately $7.5 million, mix of general fund and other fund, and that other fund is really just the proceeds from the bond sale. This will be a multi-year, multi-phased project, and the overall project cost at this point is approximately $18 million. But please understand, we are at stage gate one, so those numbers are still quite flexible. The overall project timeline.
We have a question. Yeah, excuse me.
I'm sorry, going back to the previous slide, the overall cost, approximately $18 million, does that include debt service?
Yes.
Over the full life?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
So the project timeline, we've been working on this project for a little while now, getting the business case put together, feasibility studies, working with the state CIO's office. So up until this point, we've spent a little over a year on it. We look to be heading through finishing up stage gate two early next year, and then moving into stage gate three and RFP vendor selection, and then the majority of the project is the actual implementation, which is several years. We plan on doing it as a phased approach, rolling in program by program, starting at major media level. So water quality would more than likely be the first major media, and then programs within water quality rolled in first, and then moving on to the next major media that we decide is best.
So that concludes our presentation. We'd be happy to answer any questions the committee might have.
Yes, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Director Whitman, I haven't had a chance to meet you. I understand you're fairly new to the job. And I look forward to you carrying these backlogs and getting it caught up. And out of those states that you've looked at, is to pick one or two states that has an off-the-shelf and get yourself updated. I sat through DASA's meeting yesterday on the 59 million square feet of buildings we have that are under maintenance, and I think computer systems probably fall into that same thing, which we're lagging behind. But we're spending so much on computer systems, the streamlining, and I urge you to work at the goals that you've already laid out here, streamlining your department, taking suggestions from employees, and increasing your efficiency. So thank you.
Thank you.
Other questions or comments? Thank you for the presentation.
Thank you.
Mr. McSpadden.
Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. For this particular project, just wanted to note for the members that the Legislative Fiscal Office is, of course, working very closely with the agency. I don't know yet when their Ways and Means Subcommittee meeting will be held in the Natural Resources Subcommittee. But Paul Siebert and Bob Cummings from our office are the primary analysts if you have further questions. I don't know with our schedule, being it with the JLCMT only meeting once per week, whether we'll bring this project back yet. That's kind of to be determined. Most likely, recommendations from LFO will simply be made in their general government, excuse me, in the Natural Resources Subcommittee meeting that they have.
Okay. There's no other business, and on our agenda for today. Our meeting is adjourned.
I have adjourned.